Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 169. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, you ready for VMworld?
You know, I can tell it's VMworld season when I pull open my calendar.
Yeah.
And it is just full of meetings and round, and podcast. And one advantage, I guess, to online VMworld is I'm used to, you know, having four sessions and three roundtables and eight customer VVC meetings.
Yeah.
And then 12 podcast interviews. And I feel like I'm still doing, okay, maybe two sessions this year, but I'm used to also then having to sprint from the Moscone to the sessions, to the Moscone to the sessions. Oh, yeah. Or where if we're in Vegas, like, I don't know, jog like 3 miles or whatever that is inside.
Yeah. Your feet get a break, but your mouth doesn't. You still got to do all the talking. You don't have to run across the town to get to it.
We're still going to be talking just as much. I just don't need to, I don't have to buy a new set of insoles. So I got that going for me.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of talking and speaking of VMworld, next week at VMworld on Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, John and I are going to do a happy hour. We're going to basically have a Zoom session open, and we're going to talk about, you know, the announcements of the day, any sessions, and we invite all the V community to come and join us and hang out. And so if you want to join us on the happy hour, just send an email to podcast@vmware.com, and then we'll send you the invite. But John, I figured what a great way to kick off pre-VMworld is to continue the launch. I mean, last week we talked about vSAN 7 Update 1. It makes perfect sense that this week we talk about vSphere Update 1 because there's lots of parity there. And if we're going to talk about vSphere, who are we going to talk to?
Mr. Niels.
You got it. That's right. Mr. Niels Hoggart. Niels, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, guys. Thanks again for having me.
Yeah, man. How you been? You ready for VMworld?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's been a busy few weeks. Obviously, with everything launch, looking forward to the GA date as well, so people can actually start using it. But obviously, VMworld, and we have so many cool announcements there. So definitely excited for next week.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, so speaking of announcements, lots of information around vSphere 7 Update 1. Several blogs went out last week, and I'll be sure to link those on the show notes of the podcast. But Niels, why don't we hit the top, man? The big one that I've heard about was obviously vSphere with Tanzu. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, definitely. That was the major thing for the 7 Update 1 release. And it might be a little bit confusing as well, because it used to be vSphere with Kubernetes, right? And we had a launch vehicle in the first 7 release, which was VCF, VMware Cloud Foundation, with the Kubernetes add-on. And now with vSphere 7 Update 1, we have renamed vSphere with Kubernetes to vSphere with Tanzu. So that's the first thing. But now we have a new way of doing that. Basically, we now allow you to bring your own networking, your own storage, and also have some freedom of choice for load balancing as well. So a lot easier for customers with just on-prem vSphere environments to start using Tanzu, which is a great thing.
No, I mean, it sounds like not everyone necessarily wants to go full hybrid cloud container world from zero. So for people who want to test the waters or try to work within some existing frameworks, that should help. But beyond containers, it looks like there's a lot else going on with vSphere. I mean, this is a pretty big payload.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I don't know about you guys, but one of my favorite features of the first 7 release was VLCM, Lifecycle Manager. And I'm sure you already talked about everything Lifecycle Manager with vSAN.
Yeah, we brushed on it last week on the vSAN 7 Update 1. We talked about some of the key enhancements, you know, adding Lenovo, things like that, stretch cluster support, things like that, some of the scalability. I'm also doing a VLCM session. I'm sure you're doing some stuff as well next week at VMworld.
Definitely, definitely. We'll have a couple of cool Lifecycle Manager sessions at VMworld. But with 7 Update 1, the other thing that we did for VLCM is that we now actually support NSXT as well. So in the first release, we had one constraint that was NSXT is not supported, right? Well, it was supported whenever you ran a VCF environment.
Sure.
Yeah, VCF had a workaround, but not for everybody else.
Exactly. So with 7 Update 1, we now at least have the possibility to have NSXT and VLCM enabled on the same cluster. Now, this is already done for the vSphere bits, but keep in mind that the NSXT supported release is actually a future release. So an upcoming release of NSXT will be supported with VLCM. But vSphere is already ready for NSXT.
I like it. I like it. And so from NSXT, I saw some screen capture. I haven't used it with NXT obviously yet myself, but I saw that there's the ability to uninstall and install various components for NSXT inside of the desired image.
Yeah, exactly that. So basically you hook up NSX Manager with VLCM, and now it sort of slipstreams the NSXT bits, which are just kernel modules, right, VIPs. It slipstreams them directly into the desired state. And by doing so, it's far more easy for customers to upgrade and to manage all those components on a per cluster basis, right?
Nice.
So, yeah, a lot easier to use that.
Yeah, I got to say, Niels, I do think that, in general, VLCM, I love the vision that we're going with this. One image to rule the cluster, not only to deploy, but also to ensure that the entire cluster protect from any drift whatsoever. You know, to be able to know with authority that every host in your cluster has the exact same configuration that you've chosen. So, you know, no rogue administrator can update something and have something that's not supported. But at the same time, if you add some new host, you know, you can just very easily make sure that they're up to date by having that cluster-wide management. So I'm a huge fan of that whole vision behind VLCM.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Pete. It's like I said, it's probably my favorite new feature with vSphere 7. So looking forward to future releases where we will do even more.
Sweet.
So, Niels, one of my favorite series of sessions is like the Monster VM series and the Extreme Performance series at VMworld. It looks like Monster VM is getting more monster.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure if I really like the term Monster VM or just call it large workload. Well, regardless, we were already upping the compute numbers in vSphere 7 or in vSphere 6.7 update 3, I believe, to 256 vCPUs per VM and 6 terabyte of memory per VM as well. So pretty big numbers already, but with vSphere 7 update 1, we've upped those numbers to 768 vCPUs per VM and 24 terabyte of memory for a single VM. So a typical question that we get from field, from the
That's
community.
Like $100,000 with a RAM. I'm doing the numbers here based off of US for load reduced DEMs. You guys probably pay a little more with that. Like, yeah.
I know, right? So yeah, the question here is, do we actually have customers wanting these sizings for a VM? And the answer is definitely yes. We have like epic cache operational databases landing on such VMs, SAP HANA deployments. So we definitely have customers looking for these up numbers. Definitely.
That's true. I forgot about the EMRs. So like Cache or Inner Systems that backs Epic. Because my wife is a doctor, is no matter how much hardware I'm sure they throw at that problem, is always wanting a faster response time from that interface. And the data sets, I guess we don't even think about this, but like if you go back to what the largest database would have been, 15 years ago, or it's some SQL 2003 database that people scaled to 1 terabyte, we would have called a monster data set. But just the amount of telemetry, like we're saving data that we wouldn't have saved before. And so it's causing this growth that and we want that in memory if we actually want quick response times, particularly at scale, or we would be able to run some of these real-time analytic dashboards and stuff where previously you might have gone to, it'd be a batch process that ran overnight. And now it's a real-time report that somebody can click and just instantly see. So it's interesting, like working backwards to those use cases rather than just someone wants to light $100,000 worth of memory on fire and throw it at a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, but at least we provide a freedom of choice, right? So if you want to use those up numbers, you can definitely do that. And the cool thing about those numbers is, when we look back at the initial 7 release, we've improved or basically renewed the entire DRS logic and the vMotion logic as well. And part of that was also, especially the vMotion one, is to support a 24 terabyte memory as well.
I'm just trying to, so vMotion, wow, 24 terabytes.
That's incredible.
So, I assume we're going 100 gig at that point, or multiple 100 gig connections to a host. Like that's...
Hey, ideally, yes, or you're willing to wait a long time for that memory convergence to happen. But with the updates that we did on vMotion, there's no longer that necessarily that impact during the tracing phase, right? So you should be good with a longer vMotion time, maybe. It will definitely be interesting to see tests with 24 terabyte of memory. Like I said, maybe it's a little bit of a corner case, but at least we provide a possibility to host workloads with those compute numbers.
Kind of a weird side question. Do we support RDMA for vMotion yet? Okay, so you're gonna have to use quite a few transport queues then for that. But you know, if you have that many, if you have that much RAM, you also have enough cores to where that's probably insignificant from a core burn rate.
Yeah, and 7.1 will be more interesting from a vMotion perspective. From that perspective, easier to instantiate multiple streams, utilize multiple NICs.
There was some pretty nice dynamic scaling logic I remember they were working on for vMotion in that regard that looked pretty cool.
You know, it's funny we call that a monster. We call this a monster VM today. 5 years from now, it'll just be a VM.
This is just a container. Yeah.
So DRS has historically been tied to the vCenter server. It looks like some things are changing in this release.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And that is, you're talking about vCLS or the vCenter clustering service. And basically, what we did for 7.1 is create a foundation for creating a distributed and decoupled control plane for clustering services. So obviously, you guys know vSphere HA, which is probably a bad example because that's using FDM and it's already
that's
sort
technically
of
already decoupled.
I distributed.
Mean, it's a common ESXi's. Control plane for setup, but exactly. It runs a vCenter's down. That's a common misnomer.
So there's a couple of things there. Even for HA, it's about configuration and operation, right? Because for the configuration, you still need vCenter server. Same thing with DRS. So for this first release in 7.1, we're looking to create this vCLS control plane, basically offloading already some of the DRS logic into that control plane, which is consisting of three agent VMs, so-called agent VMs. And by doing so, solving the challenge that we've had around vCenter server availability, right, for these type of services. And vCenter server availability, we have, again, vSphere HA that we can utilize for the vCSA, for the vCenter server appliance nowadays, which is a virtual machine. But and we also have vCenter server high availability. But still, looking into the future, looking into a more distributed way of having those services available, that is what vCLS is all about.
Well, if you look at the architecture of Kubernetes, fundamentally, it's your core management functionality and your placement logic is fully distributed. You have, you know, and how vSAN does distribute, you know, take a step back and look at how vSAN works as a distributed services. SimMDS runs across all the nodes and it can survive even partitions and still figure out where to place things. So it makes sense that we take this same construct that we have in other areas of infrastructure and is kind of becoming that design principle and bring that to, you know, vCenter server, which has been around 20 years, but it's still got some tricks up its sleeve here. And thinking, you know, also to kind of where this really matter, where the rubber meets the road. I was a Vue admin and I could have fully redundant connection servers. I might not have fully redundant composer servers, but the instant clones didn't care. They could bypass that. But if my vCenter went down, I couldn't provision anything.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I didn't have DRS logic. I couldn't do placement. I couldn't create anything. And even if you did find a way to shoehorn creation and bypass vCenter, you certainly weren't going to be able to HA protect it. This looks like it's going to make any concerns about a vCenter outage invisible to automated provisioning systems, be it Kubernetes, be it Horizon, be it Vrealize Automation, or whatever else you're using, right?
Yeah, definitely. All great points, John. Like you mentioned, we have other solutions using this. Also think about NSX, which is using the same similar concept for its control plane as well. So yeah, definitely the 7.1 is really the first step in the right direction. And it will be really interesting to see what we'll do for vCLS in upcoming releases, in future releases.
It looks like these are automatically creating these three VMs for this. What's the resource overhead like? Because, you know, you're used to have one VM. Now I've got an extra bonus three being created.
Yeah, exactly. It's we like to call them really lightweight VMs. So we just use a couple of megahertz. And I know we thin provision like a 2 gig disk, but the actual storage consumption is far less as well. Memory wise, it's just a couple of megabytes. So again, really small footprint, but still you'll be deploying vCLS agent VMs per cluster. Right. So that is something to remember.
My friends with 24 terabyte hosts, you know, and our 24 terabyte VMs now, I feel like a couple megabytes of memory here and there is probably is not something I'm going to bother to put in my Excel formula.
Yeah,
exactly.
So we've talked about some of what might be considered some of the more like larger changes, but honestly, at the end of the day, for the people who actually have to use the products and are the operators, sometimes what might be viewed as smaller improvements can actually really just change the quality of life they have or pave the way for maybe it's a new interface, something like Vasa that paves the way for third parties to integrate. What are some of those changes in this release? What's hiding under the hood? What else is new?
That is a great question, John. So first thing that comes to mind is EVC for graphics. And I'm assuming everybody knows EVC, Enhanced VMotion Compatibility. We have that in vSphere for Compute for a long time already.
Can we side note and say everyone should have EVC always on? There's never a justification to leave it off.
What definitely. And not even on a cluster level. Do it on a per VM level because now when you move that virtual machine, EVC settings move with it. So yeah, definitely. So, but with EVC for graphics, again, it's a first release for this new capability. And it's really around graphic-enabled VMs. So think about VMs that you configure with VSGA, our virtual shared graphic acceleration. Basically, our way proprietary technique from VMware to offload rendering to GPUs, right?
Right.
To APIs like OpenGL, like Direct3D. And if you go to the EVC mode configuration in the vSphere client in 7.1, you'll now notice that we have a graphics mode in there as well. And it's just stating just one baseline for now, a baseline graphics. But that's already laying the foundation for future new baselines as well. So if you're using VMs with VSGA, you definitely want to check out EVC for graphics.
Well, I feel like there's more competition in the graphics space. Like for a while there, we kind of lived in this homogeny of the grid cards. You had your K1, your K2 or whatever, and that was kind of it. And then now there's been subsequent generations of NVIDIA that have come out. AMD has obviously shipped some things. Intel is rumored to be shipping some new GPUs. And I don't speak from any internal knowledge. I'm talking public sources here that Intel is signaling publicly that they intend to come out swinging in graphics. So the reality that you might be refreshing or adding more graphics cards midway through a cluster's lifecycle and end up with two different generations of cards or hell, even vendors actually looks like a possibility.
Yeah.
So this doesn't look like some weird niche feature that might be needed. It looks like a reality of where the industry is going right now.
Definitely. Definitely. So another one next to EVC for graphics, we do have some updates on PVRDMA or our paravirtual RDMA driver. And for those not familiar, that is remote direct memory access, right? Basically, two ESXi hosts running workloads, and they can basically, once a control path is set up, I don't want to go into too much details on RDMA, but once a control path, a communications channel is set up, so to speak, you can now completely bypass the kernel without, so you're not spending CPU cycles, and you'll have insane low latency and improving bandwidth as well.
Is
right?
this Rocky and iWarp or just Rocky you're talking about?
That is Rocky. Rocky version 1 and version 2 even.
Oh, so we can route it. Although routing RDMA sounds about as much fun as routing like IPv6 multi. But I'm sure there's some breaks.
Yeah, exactly. So you might want to stick to Rocky V1 maybe. But hey, in the end, with vSphere 7.1, we did some improvements. So we can now also support native endpoints. And that is pretty cool, right? So think about storage devices, storage array that might expose themselves as a RDMA endpoint. And we already laid the foundation in vSphere to be able to set up control channels or communications channels with those native endpoints.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Smart quote by John.
So RDMA, it was something that like has been around for quite a while. And I mean, you know, it was big in the InfiniBand land and trying to break that 80 microsecond, you know, overhead of TCP, at least in the case of Rocky, not necessarily iWarp. But it is something that's kind of been viewed as like InfiniBand, an unnecessary complexity. It requires more expensive NICs, but you're starting to see RDMA support on mainstream price NICs. You don't have to go buy the bougie, fancy, you know, Mellanox that has a secondary profile and cost twice as much. And you have to knock at your OEM, you know, at the side door and ask quietly for. Also with RDMA, it looks like it's an inevitable necessity because the amount of CPU cores we're going to start burning to do 100 gig of transport, that CPU cost is starting to add up. It wasn't a big deal when I hosted 4 gigs of Ethernet traffic or even 10, but when we start pushing, you know, 25, 50, 100, it looks like it's just, it's a necessary cost, and the cost of that offload and the complexity of that configuration, or the, I guess, the simpler operation with iWarp, looks like it's going to make a lot of sense for people to start on the more serious data centers look at.
Yeah, definitely. And another thing that I like about Rocky, for example, is that you could just utilize, well, obviously you'll need lossless Ethernet, and definitely you want to be using higher bandwidth, so 25 gigs and up networks, NICs. And yes, NICs do need support RDMA, but you already have some, well, let's air quote, mid-range NICs that already support RDMA.
Yeah, you're so not getting this on the 100 gig Intel 500 series like that. You know,
no,
the thing that Pete would use at his house. Yeah, yeah, you're not.
Yeah, but exactly.
But the, so you know,
but you can still utilize your same Ethernet fabric, right? If it supports all those things, obviously.
Well, and the switch does have to support Rocky. If it's iWarp, you don't need switch support.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. But yeah, if you want to support Rocky, it's basically lossless Ethernet. So that's
data center bridging. I think that's based on. We'll have a listener correct us EFC. On Twitter. Savvy.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's another cool thing. And the last, but certainly not least, is something that we've been working quite a long on with our technology partner, AMD. So if you remember the first 7 release, we had some new capabilities with the Intel processors from a security point of view. And now with 7 Update 1, we introduced AMD SEVES. So that's secure encrypted virtualization. Basically a way when you have a new AMD EPYC, a Rome CPU, you can encrypt per VM. So everything that's touched upon from a CPU perspective, so also think about memory pages, etc., gets encrypted from within the CPU already.
So we already had encryption for storage. We had data at rest with either VM encrypt or vSAN encrypt. We have encryption in transit for vMotion and now vSAN data in transit encryption. So when the memory is swinging, we now have encrypted memory at rest, I call it, even if it is rest because it's volatile. So if someone is going to break into my data center and physically deploy liquid nitrogen cooling to cool the DEM so that they can transport them and steal the data from the memory, or I guess deploy something like a Rowhammer attack is probably the more reasonable memory attack. But I mean, we're getting into some pretty crazy levels of protection here.
Yeah. By the way, John, this sounded like you actually have some experience with this. Freezing DIMMs?
So if you want to, I mean, normally with DIMMs, when they lose power, they dump the data pretty quickly. Uh-huh. But there have been some theoretical attacks, or not theoretical, some nation state style attacks. That discuss basically, I think it was using cooling to steal the memory. I'm going to put this in the show notes so people don't think I'm crazy for this.
You sure this wasn't a James Bond movie you saw?
Yeah. Plankers will probably be calling me out on Twitter. I think the more realistic attack is stuff like stuff that does try to pierce through, like some of the previous attacks on TPS and things like that that people were concerned about. Obviously, you salt those now, but any type of shared memory attack, some of the various specters and those types of attacks where there were concerns, is even if you can pierce through the, you know, ring zero protections, you get someone else's memory and it's got a different, it's just encrypted garbage.
Mm-hmm.
So just adding more and more layers of security against increasing more sophisticated actors. Just, this looks like the accumulation of just a ridiculous arms race over these years.
Yeah, and it's exactly like you said, right? It's providing multiple layers of security, or even providing the options to utilize them, because typically when you security is always a trade-off, right? I think that's a quote by Bob as well. Bob's using that a lot. So with this new capability, if you use it, obviously, we just talked about the benefits, right? But the considerations are that some other vSphere features like vMotion, FSR, fault tolerance, FSR being fast suspend resume for storage vMotion, for example, those are not supported with AMD SEVES. I do want to point out that, talking about Bob Plankers a little bit, he has a quite extensive video on this specific feature and a blog post. So it might be good if you're interested to look those up to get the details.
Yeah, and I'll be sure to leave those on the show notes of the podcast for sure. Well, man, yeah, it looks like you guys covered all bases. You guys did lifecycle management, lots of operations, lots of enhancements to hardware, but and security. And the big one, of course, being vSphere with Tanzu. I know we barely scratched the surface on vSphere with Tanzu, and that was intentional because we're actually going to do a deeper dive with Cormac and with Miles to really talk a lot more about vSphere with Tanzu, because that's probably the biggest part of this release, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That is a really interesting new capability that we brought with 7.1. Yep.
Sweet, sweet. So VMworld next week. Well, Niels, what do you have planned? Do you have anything going on that people can reach out to you? Are you going to be accessible?
Well, so I'm planning on doing attending a happy hour, supposedly by one of a podcast.
One of the 1,000 podcasts in the B community.
No. Definitely my favorite podcast, B. but that's actually a good idea. I think VMworld being virtual is really interesting. And I've seen some numbers of the number of attendees already or people who registered for VMworld. And those are insane numbers, right?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely looking forward to all the sessions I have about lifecycle, about upgrade, about DRS and vMotion as well. And next to that, looking to find a way to interact with all our customers and partners as well. So the happy hour is actually a really good idea. And I'll definitely try to hop on.
Yeah. I'm hoping that it becomes, I'm looking forward to just having some fun with it. But I do really hope that a bunch of customers, partners, and everybody join together. So hoping it's going to be a nice turnout. We'll see. All right, Niels, good stuff. As always, thank you for giving us the goods on vSphere. We will definitely be in touch with you next week throughout VMworld. I know you and I are definitely going to have some customer conversations with VLCM together. So we'll see you there. John, anything else before we let this man go?
No, that's it.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this in all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Mr. Niels Haggort for talking vSphere 7 Update 1. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.